everyone, and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. My name is Peggy Ployer, and I'm the founder and CEO, as well as the host of this weekly broadcast put on by Sped Homeschool. We at Sped Homeschool empower families to home educate children with learning challenges, and I encourage you to check out our website at spedhomeschool.com to learn more about the resources and support that we offer families. And you know what? Some of the best resources that we have are our partners. And I'm excited again today to have another one of our partners on with us, Amanda Duncan. Welcome, Amanda. Thanks for being with us.
Wonderful to be here.
Yeah, across the ocean, we are keeping this conversation going. So Amanda's over in the UK. And of course, I'm in the middle of the United States here in Texas. If you are watching and you want to pop on and say where you are from, we'd love to know where you're watching from too. I know we have viewers all over the world, and so it's exciting to hear. But also know that we are doing this live. So if you have a friend that may want to join us, we're talking about communication skills, improving them through storytelling on the go today. It's one of the things that as we're wrapping up this month of April, we've been focusing a lot on how do we get learning outside, you know, and kind of away from the books, because we're probably kind of sick and tired of the books after so many months. I know that's how I always was with homeschooling my kids, my very active boys. We just got to get outside. So hopefully today we'll give you some encouragement as well as some ideas on how to do that. So share the broadcast. Know if you want to put comments or questions on, if you're watching on YouTube or on our Facebook page, you can do that right in the feed. And we will see those come up on my screen and we'll incorporate those in our conversation. So if you have any questions off the top, make sure you throw those in, or as we're going along, we'll see those as well. And if you're joining us on a recorded session, thank you for doing that. Thank you for downloading our podcast. A lot of you do that. I know I was at another conference this last weekend and so many parents said, I just love plugging you in my ear when I'm doing dishes. So if you're doing dishes, we hope that we make your dishwashing a little more enjoyable. So Amanda, as we get started, I would just love our audience to get to know maybe a little bit more about you, and then we'll talk about, I guess you can talk about your organization too, and maybe just why you're so passionate about storytelling in general. It'd be a great way to start.
Well, so I'm the founder of ScribeEasy, which is a children's storytelling platform. And it's a wonderful opportunity to develop fun strategies to improve children's vocabulary, their communication, and holistic outcomes. Storytelling is dear to my heart, as I'm sure it is for many parents who read to their children, who are looking, using the world around them to use that as a launch pad for imparting information. But the wonderful thing around the platform that we developed is to try and embed and integrate sort of a blended learning approach so that you could share knowledge, but then help children with developing their skills to actually use the information. So to get skills, a chance to have fun with building vocabulary, the links, it's interesting actually. I mean, so one of the reasons I started ScribeEasy was actually for my son. Dyslexia, and he was coming home from school at the time and feeling very disillusioned that he was singled out in, you know, into a separate class, and he was really fixated on the technique, and it worried me that within the classroom environment it was, you know, it wasn't the focus on what he had to say, but it was how he was doing.
Oh, the mechanics, yes.
And I worried. I'd read a report from NASA about children going into schools. 97% of them are near geniuses when they go in. So the age of 30, it was a longitudinal study. And then NASA, I think it was over 7 or 8 years, then they tested the same cohort of children. And rote learning had kind of drilled out. It wasn't the kind of confidence of children, the creative confidence. So, yes, they memorize, you know, good at, with memory. They'd acquired school skills, but in terms of inventive powers, that those, you know, that sort of the whole brain needs to be working together. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they'd kind of lost their confidence, and those near geniuses, it was only, I think, 3% had retained as adults, you know, the years later, that same ability. Mm. And that really struck me. My background is art, so I was an arts teacher. I actually have a master's in ceramics and glass. And I remember when I got to the Royal College of Art thinking, why did I have to wait so long to learn how to learn? Yeah. And I think families who are in that wonderful position where they have the opportunity to teach children, you know, the inspiration, imparting that knowledge and allowing children the belief that, you know, to trust them that by in the right direction, that they will develop the skills. You might have to wait a little bit because it's very tempting to just give them a spelling list.
Yes.
And then, yes, they know it. But actually, long-term studies show that when children learn to become good researchers and all those skill sets, so give them the framework to discover, put them in the right environment, and then let them go. And those skills they're lifelong skills.
Yes.
And I think the last little thing that struck me was at school, I hadn't done very well in maths. I hadn't done very well in chemistry and sciences. And yet I get onto my master's and I excelled in chemistry because I was formulating phrases. I was suddenly interested in
interest-based learning.
Where the minerals come from, where the cobalt come, you know, the mountains in Zaire. It was just suddenly the periodic table took on a whole new meaning for me because I was interested in it. And so that was the start for me with Scribe Easy to help my son and allow him a method that would allow him to learn to tell stories, build his vocabulary through his interests. So we would scrapbooking really, but we digitized it so we could scale it.
That's so cool. Yeah. And I love you sharing your example like that, because I think as parents, like especially of young children, we can sometimes look at how the rote learning just has to happen. It has to happen. And yet we can make it so tedious and difficult. And I know I felt a lot of times like I was just talking to a blank wall with my kids. and I really felt uncomfortable with that method. And I felt a lot of people around me were very much in disagreement with what I did when I homeschooled my kids. But now looking at how creative my kids are as young adults, I don't regret having taught them in a much more different method than just rote learning. And I didn't know about that study, but I guess internally that was just how I felt God was leading me, and I followed it. And it was awesome. So thank you for sharing that. Cause it's important for us to hear over and over again. And So you've got some slides, and I'm going to pull those up so that we can see them. And if you are listening on the podcast, just know that you can pop over to our YouTube channel at Sped Homeschool, and you can watch this full interview. We're also going to share three or four shorter segments next week on our YouTube channel as well. So if there's just a small section that you want to rewatch instead of listening or watching the entire one, those will be on our YouTube channel next week. So we're going to talk about improving communication through on-the-go storytelling, and I'm excited to get started. So just let me know when I should be popping through the slides, and I will do that.
Slide two I've kind of covered. So a little bit about me, my studio, and the kind of work that I've done in the past in terms of where ceramics led me as a designer, but also now moving into technology. With Scribe Easy, we deliver workshops around the world and in the UK, but digital storytelling. But it's very, if we go to the next slide, just the screenshots from the platform, just to give an overview of the approach is children can make things. So the workshops include making things which and items, which then they take in to build digital pictures. So the communication is in the composition of an image. So the stillness of an image, how you might use language, scale, perspective, moving things around, giving children time to, you know, for ideation. Visual spelling list, for example, you're working with teeth or a deer or a robot that you've made. And the platform allows children to work in a very self-contained place, but use their storytelling research, so photographs that they've made and objects that they've made, and then help them through analysis, through technology. We can break down the sorts of words that they've written through might have text-to-speech. Children's vocabulary are often more, it's more, you know, it's going to be wider than when it's written or if they're not typing so fast, but they can get words down onto the page very quickly, which means that we can appeal to all sorts of abilities and then help children from once their words are on the page, parts of speech, the verbs, the nouns, to start to understand the patterns around your own learning. So giving children the tools to be to work together with parents, but also to start to analyze their, you know, their stories. So that was the thrust of Scribe Easy. The next slide, I won't talk too much about Scribe Easy, but
I wanted to point out too is, you know, that the text to speech is great, but when using it like just alone by itself, it turns into dictation, which is an extremely difficult thing to do. Even as an adult, I find it hard to dictate because I have to add in the commas and, you know, and you can go back and do that. But the way that you have it set up, because I've used your program, you gave me a sample of it, and it was so easy to just be able to pick and choose those words, and then you can stop yourself, and like you said, with the images they add in, and it's a process, and so it's just it's really cool, and it's colorful too, which you know brings kids in.
It does, and it's interesting. We'll talk a little bit more because this topic was so close to everything that we do. But in terms of using photographs and then combining things, so rather than giving a child a photograph, suddenly they pick the objects, it's their choices. But the use of photographs, it means that, you know, their descriptions are very powerful because they can actually see the colours, they're analysing. I mean, I just wanted to include very quickly this, this I really love this you see the goblin with the house. You probably don't have many houses like this in Texas, but this is a little old house in the Cotswold, which is in the middle of England. But we asked, and these were reception years children, so these are 4 and 5 year olds. And this, we asked the children, so there are 30, a class of 30, and so some examples here, and we asked them to find in the story pack the crooked house and then find the goblin. So that was their little bit, you know, some research, hearing the words, and then describe the goblin by looking at the crooked house. So this is what one, and there's a thesaurus in the platform as well. The hunchback old goblin was as corrupt, so they got that word, they typed in bad initially.
And then the thesaurus brought up the
corrupt, misshapen, and crooked as the ancient stony house and the crumbly brickwork is like the goblin's flaky skin. And for a young writer, you know, to start seeing the world and to open up rather than just focusing, we show children where to focus their attention within the photographs or on, you know, on their journey which we'll talk about more, but it enriches the storytelling just by showing children where to look and how to look.
Right. Yeah. Because, when we get into the mechanics, we forget about the creativity part that's really necessary for storytelling.
Yes. So the next slide, Peggy.
Yeah.
We'll mm-hmm. start with what we'd love to show you or share with you today.
Yeah. Okay. So, we're going to go through the why and tools and resources. Okay. And the ability to notice, the building curiosity and the benefits, outcomes and emerging patterns. So I'm excited to get started. So so let's start with the why then.
So I thought it was useful to just stop and think, well, what is
what is communication? That's like the elephant in the room, isn't it?
So, and why is it important? And how can storytelling on the go? Well, how does it actually play a role in building up good communication skills?
Mm.
And I think it's really, as parents, we're rushing around a lot of the time and, you're trying to fit things in and just the trip to the shops, or you're doing your online shopping and busy lifestyles.
Right.
We forget sometimes that so many moments can be a moment for a little bit of
so
creativity.
True.
And sharing a little bit of information. And so to think about communication, it's the next slide.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity as, within discussions, our trips, our, car journeys, walking, to always have an opportunity to build up the four C's, which we need more now than ever for the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking earlier about how children now are going to change jobs typically 7 times or more in their lifetimes. Their careers are going to change. And I can see with my eyes so closely tuned into technology, the biggest demand for employability is creativity, is having children that have agile thinking, that can work with information, so are skillful in their abilities, but actually take information and repurpose it, reuse it. So out of that skills, we're working closely with a lot of nurseries and very early years here as well. And it's really interesting, the links with communication and vocabulary that's learned in the early years and teenage behavioural patterns. There's a longitudinal study. I can post up the links for...
I'll share them in the description
It was a research that was done in Australia, and they showed that children that had wider vocabulary in their early years just went on to be far more successful, were less likely to fall foul in their, in their ways to drop out. It was quite profound, really, how... having really good vocabulary affected children's behaviour. And because it's obvious in a way, but their ability to self-express. But just coming back, I talk about vocabulary, but vocabulary can be many things. If we go to the next slide, children's skill sets through their speech, through their visual cues. And this is where storytelling is wonderful, because if you're observing, noticing people's reactions, building up children's social and emotional learning is really powerful. Body posture, how do you think that, what was going on there? You should read those kind of
those unspoken cues.
Obviously the parts of speech, I think we do a lot of work within our workshops on giving children choice. So the words you might want to choose, the verbs, the adjectives. So she was happy, or she was delighted, or she was ecstatic. Suddenly, or there's more punch, or there's more power. So having range, emotional range within your vocabulary. So showing children the, you know, you could focus quite quickly on the specific word that they've used, but then give them the ranges up and down of that, you know, the emotional valence is, you know, is quite powerful to the children. Creative formats. Obviously, there's the different sorts of communication that comes through art and film. There's a, in the middle here, the picture here is a lovely wall that is painted, a street artist in London Bridge. And I went to see him recently on a walk, and he showed us his, he'd been paid by our London Transport to decorate walls, street art. And it was absolutely amazing to stand and observe and see how these hearts, how people reacted, passers by. And they would stand and cuddle each other in front of the hearts.
Oh, wow.
It's just amazing. And it's those little sort of touches and those that bringing those, I guess, those moments of for children to observe how colours and tone and shapes are all forms of communication too, and how they can make others feel. So empathy, pattern, temperature. So that was sort of a cover off of the sorts of ways we get quite focused on communication being one thing.
Yes. And that's good to remember.
Yes. And children, the tin cans here, well, they're paper cans, but those were some workshops that we did recently, and the children all made an artwork, a tin can themselves with their own labels to express themselves. And so they were drawing and created their own fonts, created their own, and used their colours to self-express and then talk about things. So it was a wonderful thing. So next slide.
Yeah, it's amazing when you start with that component that gives them the ability to choose and create, and just how much communication can come from that. That's really exciting. All right, so tools for storytellers. Excited about this.
So I was thinking about storytelling on the go, and I'm sure most parents will, you know, be very familiar with these kind of things. So keeping notes, scrapbooking, taking photographs with your phone, collecting things and obviously analysing them later, measuring things. They're great opportunities for the maths and the science and then the research after. Also before, which I'll talk about a little bit more. Things, if you're reading books, how you might bring a book to life through, for example, a journey by looking at the characters that might fit the characters that you're reading about. I'll talk about this later, but I'm reading a wonderful book at the moment by Catherine Rundell. It's called Rooftoppers. I recommend it so highly. The characters are so vivid. But now I'm walking around. It's for sort of, well, children 9 years up. But it's lovely when you look around and you're enjoying a book, but then suddenly you think, oh, that would suit that character. Or
yes, it does that. I guess I have never processed that. But yes, when you're in the midst of a story and you kind of start bringing that whole thing into your world and you find yourself using some of the words that the characters use and all of that.
Or you're at the checkout till and you think, hi, that character would really fit that character. You know, this bringing books to life. And obviously, I was thinking about car journeys. Sometimes it's really good to just let children get a little bit bored, look out the window.
Now in the day and age when we've got video screens in front of them and all of those things, we've lost that art of imagination and boredom that we had in our generation.
And I'm such a big fan of allowing children to have a little bit of time to be a little bit bored, because that's when the invention starts. And I think it's very easy to give children something to do. Big tendency, read a book, do this, or, you know, why don't you draw? Allow children to make the decisions for themselves, because you're empowering them as adults to think about how to fill time. And when they start and I see it, you know, with my son now, I'm a bored mum, and it's really hard sometimes, because I'll just try and not say anything, because he knows where everything is. And it's interesting to see after a bit, and he started doing that. It was good.
We would take our kids camping and then hiking. And of course, some of the places we went camping, I mean, now you can get data just about everywhere. But during that time, we didn't always have mobile data. And so they were bored a lot more, because we created those scenarios where there wasn't any place to plug in things and all of that. And So if you're desperate and you're finding, how do I get my kids off of technology? Just go camping for a week.
Yeah, and start picking up the leaves and the twigs and the birds and or just listening to the, picking out the different sounds of the birds. You know, we forget there's a lot of pressure on as parents to feel we've got to set our child up for careers, for their, you know, to have more, as most, much intelligence and knowledge as possible. But actually, you know, the ability to work with just a little bit of information and be agile in your thinking and quick thinking is just as powerful. Children will pick up. They don't need to be on a quiz all the time, do they? Just answering questions. It's
exactly. Yes. Yes. That is a very, very good reminder.
the next slide, and I love this quote, you can observe a lot by observing. And it's so true. We often think, and I was just going back to car journeys and agile thinking, but I just added in a couple of thoughts here for car journeys, but helping children, for example, connect what you see. So what you get when you cross a, you know, a butterfly with a cow, or, you know, just well, just get them mixing things up, you know, on a journey. And just having fun with bits of information and spotting things, and then playing, you know, playing with them, quick things, but that's something very, you know, in a couple of seconds, that little, you know, all parts of the brain will have lit up to come up with some fun answers there. So if we go to the next slide, I'm going to move on a little bit from observing and looking and seeing, and what's the difference. And recently, I live not far from the River Thames in London, and we get two tides a day, a high and a low tide twice a day. And so when the tide is down, it's a wonderful time for mudlarking. I don't know if you have the same phrase. Mudlarking is a Victorian term.
Okay.
And when people in the Victorian times would go and try and find what they could in the Thames, you know, in the sand, and keep the find. So it's become quite popular as a pastime. You often see families down, and you probably get that with your riverbeds, but the River Thames, it's been, you know, such a source of trade and industry. So it's amazing what you do find in the silt. Recently, I went with some friends and some younger children, and we were finding, we just went to find, see what we could see.
Right.
And it really struck me, because we were wandering back and we'd been looking and we had some finds. We had some clay pipes and I had a couple of sort of nice coloured stones that I liked. Nothing in particular. And on the way back, we bumped into a chap who, I don't know, like Peter his name was, but he was a professional. He had a metal detector. And I said, what have you got in your box there? He showed us, and he had, I said, oh, wash, you know, we're all agog with what he had. Oh, what are these? Oh, these are horses' teeth. And I'd never seen shapes like that before. And some Elizabethan musket balls, like little pellets, and tiny. And then these tiny, tiny little pins. It was no way we'd seen anything like this. But we decided to walk back and have a look. We were inspired by what he'd found. And you know what? We found, because we were looking for them, we were actively looking for them, we moved from being passive looking, you know, to actively seeing. And my goodness, we came back with horses' teeth, all sorts of things that we knew what to look for. Our eyes tuned in. And I just couldn't stop thinking how, when you know what, you know, so if you do a bit of research before your storytelling on a go journey, it's amazing. You know, I was looking at the climate for Texas, you know, and, you know, you've got such a, you know, well, it's so different from...
It's very different from where you are, yes.
And I was thinking, gosh, what would that list look like? And the kind of research, I was looking up the birds and the trees. And, you know, it's interesting when you know, if you're going out to look for something, it's like, right, we're going to see 10 jackdaws today or 10 eagles. Or there's real fun in the storytelling on, you know, on the go, and there's the maths, and there's the working together to find it as well,
which is I know of people that do, because we're near the ocean, and they go down and they go with their kids, they look for seed pods, because seeds that have fallen off of trees in Africa will actually come all the way here to Texas, and you can find those pods and then teach them in geography where those seeds started from and how far they traveled to get to the beach here. So there's just so many things. But if you didn't know it was a seed pod, you'd walk right over it and not think anything more of it. So I'm so glad, you brought that up, because that is, it adds a different dimension when you know there's things out there that that you can be looking for instead of just anything.
Yes, it's that subtle shift of looking and seeing, and spending a little bit of time to prep up before you go of what you might find. So you get so much more. It's enriched, you know, that trip that you might plan to do. And so then the next slide, Peggy, was, I was thinking about storytelling on the go. Oh, sorry, that was the horses. So
there's what you found, that's really cool.
And just suddenly we looked at the you know, the ground in front of us, and it was just looked completely different. So the next slide, please, was about doing the same, but also something different. So there's a lot to do with, you know, we often get into routines and patterns. And so thinking about what more could we get out of storytelling? We don't always have the time to, you know, but we could do a walk differently. Not necessarily backwards, but just go the different way around the block or the different way around the park. I run quite a lot, and I know if I run the different way around the park, it looks completely different. And that was really quite interesting. And again, there's lots of psychological studies that suggest that just by doing something different will bring, you know, make the storytelling more, you know, enrich the storytelling, will increase the creativity and the ability to innovate. So looking up, you know, it's just simple things, maybe just focusing on you're going out, but you're going to only look up, you're only going to look to the left. Maybe going back to the same place different times of the day. So observation, what's successful, you know, what's changed, and looking for different shapes and sizes, things, you know, the objects that you might find. How can you bring them to life with your, you know, your imagination? So collecting things is
right.
Next slide.
My daughter found a skeleton the last time we were camping, and I don't know if she's even figured out what it is yet, but it was so fun to listen to her, you know, think through her head what all these species it could have been. Yes. And just to see the creativity start coming out in that. And then she was doing research and she found out about this kid that cleans skeletons, and she learned the process of how to clean it. And just that one little find turned into like days, if not weeks, of research and fun.
It's amazing how much mileage you can get.
Oh, yeah.
Something. Mm-hmm. I forgot to say, pareidolia is the thing that I love doing with, you know, with Josh. We would lie and look at, you know, the shapes that we could see in the clouds.
Find
a rock or a stone and it looks anthropomorphic, you know, it looks like a character or the art, or forming, you know, making other things out of objects. That's wonderful storytelling, you know, with objects and sculpture and shapes and sizes.
We forget to look up.
And be playful with the things that we might have as well. I saw, actually, going back to the Thames, another family had laid out all the stones in colour order. And it was really beautiful because there was the brick, you know, going through the stones and, you know, it's so much opportunity to learn. But so this one was, this next thoughts were around ways to build curiosity. So the golden circle, just by thinking, you know, having the what, how, and the why, and applying that to virtually anything, suddenly, you know, I just put an example here, and I did look up the answers, actually. I can't remember them now. What is the sky? You know, and actually you look it up, you think, it's all sorts of atoms and, you know, it's...
Right, and it's reflected and it's not exactly what we see, and
And then I was thinking, you know, how's the sky blue but the space is black? Why is the sky blue? Suddenly, just by applying the what, how, and the why to virtually anything, you've got a lesson there or some research to do, answers. So... and then obviously taking that on further, something I used to do with my son was he had, not this toy, but he had a cow, a soft cow that he loved. And he used to take this cow everywhere. And I came across this quote by Jean-Luc Godard, which I thought was, it's not where you take things from, it's where you take them to.
I love that.
I just thought, isn't that lovely? You know, the thought of, you know, taking the child's world into different places. You know, we took, you know, cow to NASA, to the moon, or the just suddenly is this way to sort of I guess build empathy up with early years. But how would cow feel? What would he experience?
Yes.
And just applying the what, how, where, who, when to places, and then you know, could it be this time, or, you know, could it be current day, or would it be in the past? And in terms of vocabulary, and if you're writing creatively, suddenly your tenses would be changing. So
it's
a wonderful way to transition times and what was life like then, or just by getting one draft down and then shifting it to a different time zone.
And that happens so much easier through communication verbally, because our kids will naturally catch that so much easier than when they're writing it down on paper. Yes. And so to be working on that, the switches between tenses, yet in that context, makes it easier when they move to that in a writing context. I know that that's a really difficult concept to get if you haven't experienced it like that.
Yes. We're as a platform, starting to work with lots of museums. And it's interesting. So we look at, different settings, because within the platform, there's always a setting. You put your characters in and you've got your objects. And we've got Victorian streets, and there's streets I know well, but they look so different. So just, for example, sitting in a place and then imagining storytelling on the go, what might it be like in the future? What might it be like 10 years ago or 50 or 100 years ago?
Right.
The grain, again, a lovely way to just, get children's imagination going and thinking about their futures, I guess. Storytelling.
So
the next slide.
Information.
Was coming back to being active storytellers. So something that we see really through the ScribeEasy platform, and I think this is very common with children who maybe, are on the spectrum, for example, autistic, for example, or ADHD, often children, and I just think it's a much easier way personally to learn, only because I like to get totally immersed in one thing, always spinning lots of plates. But I remember sitting on a plane once. We'd been camping. We were coming back from a little island just outside of England. And the man on the plane, my son, was quite obsessed with stones at the time. And so we had a collection of stones. And his man turned around to me and he said, whatever your son likes, just let him just follow it. And it stood in my head, and to do that. And he's now massive to football and sports, but it was interesting. So I really followed his interests, and I used to be quite observant to see where we went. What, give him the choices to what objects would he pick up, or what would he do with things? If we had a collection of things, you can see we've got a bowl here from the how would he lay them out? How would he organize them? And whether it was shape or whether it was by colors. So you start to see patterns in your in your child's thinking, which it really helps in terms of how to then share information with children, because you can see how to phrase it or how to, there's so many approaches to share a topic and to bring it to life. But if you know that you can get in there because it's hitting the right angle, that's going to appeal to them.
Right, exactly. Yes. Yep. And it makes it easier on them too, because it's an open channel. My middle one was so into superheroes that I even changed all of his math problems to superhero related math problems, and he would just get them instantly, and he would struggle if we put it in any other context. But it just made it easy.
It's so true. My son says you sort of trick children, Mum. Tricking. It's just like you're saying, Peggy, it's just making learning engaging and for the child. And I think as adults, it doesn't really ever stop if you're
interested. Oh, no, exactly.
Your brain is wired in different ways. But so the next slide was just a quick slide around expanding the curiosity. So imagining that you've done your walk or you've done your, you're on the go storytelling, but how to keep that going and to sort of flip the learning. So allowing children to teach you back. So what might they make to show you and present to you? So it might be the stones, and then maybe they a map, and they'd put the things on the map around the world that found, or so building products, things.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Creating a treasure hunt, for example, is a lovely way for, you know, children to kind of learn how to navigate around, you know, like map reading, or showing you that they, you know, their memory of a place where they've been to, and dropping things into places, so, you know, so that there could be clues to go to help you get to find a place, so that they're learning about a particular place that you might have taken to. The books there, actually, I remember the one time in my life where I had sort of creative envy was an artist had, and it was just a wonderful walk, and she created a podcast, and basically you went along to the library and you clicked on some headphones and it was recording, and you had to find the clues to go to the next place. And it started by going into the you've got your headphones on, and you had to go and find the book that was a particular book in the library by listening to where she said where to go. You pulled out the book, and then there was the next instruction. And it took you on a magical historical walk.
Wow.
And it was so powerful as a concept. And I did try it again with my son by just doing little recordings and putting these little treasure hunt things. So I kind of teed it up beforehand.
Right.
But it was really fun to do. And with a group of children, you could make something really quite playful. But it was very immersive as a history of a place. They were listening to little recordings and sounds and you
can
stop
around. Right. Which would make you look in different directions than you normally would look and interact in an environment than how you would normally. It goes back to that concept you were talking about earlier, is that, you know, when we do things maybe backwards or differently, that it gives us an entirely new perspective. And then we've seen it in the past. So that's very cool.
So next slide. Thank you. Was about on-the-go art and using that was the last slide. Sorry, I was next slide, Peggy. Sorry.
There we go.
Oh, there you go. So on-the-go art. So this is standing on a cliff in Hastings, which is a seaside town. It's probably a very different landscape to Texas.
Very different, yes. Our houses are not that close together. Well, maybe in some places, but.
Well, I was just thinking about storytelling on the go in terms of art and using photography. Just by zooming in with my camera, suddenly, you know, and then using different filters, I got new perspectives, new angles, just from standing in the same place.
Right.
And there was something really powerful, you know, from this photo. So it could be create something that you could draw from. But it just made you, again, going back to, you can learn a lot from observe, you know, that just zoning in, going, breathing out and looking, you know, macro, and then going in micro.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I think we often forget to do.
We
look at everything from one perspective, but actually going deeper and deeper, whether it's a physical object or just using a camera. It was very much about, from a creative perspective, suddenly you've got blocks of color and shapes, and the photography becomes a very different piece.
It makes you slow down when you want to stop and take a picture. And we lived on a farm for 5 years, and I had a friend who would always come out every year and take photographs, because she said, you live in the most beautiful place, but I was always so busy that I never stopped enough to see the beauty until I looked at her pictures. And it just reminded me over and over again, I do live in a beautiful place. Why don't I stop? You know, the busyness of life gets us so caught up in that, and we can do that with our kids too, and not stop and look. But that gift of photography is it's amazing to give you, just give your kid a camera. And I mean, some of the pictures they come back with are hilarious and a different perspective than you'd ever have taken a picture of whatever the object was of.
I think so, because if they're young, their height immediately.
Yes, exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And you see the world through their eyes, don't you? Sort of adult lenses. So,
well, right.
Yeah. And yeah, I think in keeping that going, lighting is really, but allowing children to be playful with their storytelling, with whatever tools that, you know, they can, you know, get their hands on, really.
Right.
But yeah, cameras are wonderful. And then you've got things, I mean, the cutting things up and montaging.
Oh, that's
very powerful tool.
Just combining those ideas, but visually being able to do that and then to be able to put words to it afterwards, after you've really thought and contemplated, you know, all of that crossover. You know, it's, you took that concept at the very beginning of our discussion about, yeah, what would have been mashup be between, you know, this and this. But now when we're looking at a photograph, we have a little more time to contemplate that and really think deeper into it. And for kids who have slow processing speeds, that is key to have images so they can have the time to give the words to those images too.
Yes. Yes. The descriptive powers, the colors, the shapes that they see.
I just know we took our kids to Rome for 10 days and my daughter is an artist and she is one of those that has always been very observant. She didn't learn it from her mother, but she would sit in these cathedrals and all of a sudden she sat down and she was looking at the ceiling. She goes, "Do you know that every one of those tiles, the flowers up above are different?" I'm like, I would have never even looked at the ceiling, let alone spent enough time to figure out that they were all different shapes.
Brilliant power of observation.
Yeah. But, you know, that's to cultivate that.
Yes.
And just that creativity just increases by being able to observe. So,
yes. Yeah. So the next slide, I was just looking at, you know, how the things that you might gather. So whether it's photography or the drawings or the collections that you've made, but how that might start to influence your creative writing. And I just couldn't resist putting in a little thing from this book that I'm reading, because it's just, it's topical to me at the moment. And I love the way Catherine Rundell, so this is how she describes a house. She woke when they drew up in a street smelling of trees and horse dung. Sophie loved the house at first sight. The bricks were painted the brightest white in London and shone even in the dark. The basement was used to store the overflow of books and paintings and several brands of spiders. And the roof belonged to the birds, and Charles lived in the space in between. And just thought how, by putting those elements of, you know, a pile of books, a house, a bird, if you're reading a book and you show a child what's possible in terms of writing, so the next time they go to describe a house, they're storytelling on the go. They might have collected some articles, you know, who lived in the house, or what would be in the house. And so something that would inform how they might borrow from.
Right. It wouldn't just be a description of the exterior of the house. They'd be thinking more interior and living things and all of that.
Yes.
Like it goes beyond your typical description.
So the gathering of article, you know, things, the storytelling on the go, those objects can become very powerful tools for the imagination. How you might connect them, seemingly disparate things, together.
Absolutely.
Next slide. Moving just now towards the end, but looking at benefits and outcomes. Ultimately, the storytelling on the go, we're building confidence because we're building children's agility in their thinking. Mm. They're not being tested, so to speak. They're their imagination. Mm-hmm. You're allowing them to take authorship because I think the focus should be on allowing the child to lead in storytelling on the go. So you might create a framework for them, but for them to lead, do you see what I mean, with their answers, the how, why, just give them the opportunity to make those, you know, to find the answers. I think the storytelling on the go gives space for the thinking and the reflection and time to, you know, to create ideas. And obviously, and the benefits of the things that you collect and the reflection after the trip or, you know, that you've got time for analysis, organisation skills, you've got that sense of well-being, the enjoyment from the activity.
Right.
If you've set something up and you've been working together, then there's collaboration and sharing, working together. Maybe storytelling included finding sticks that you would make a structure with. You sort of and then you photograph that, and then the story carries on. The creativity and ultimately the storytelling on the go. You're helping your child advance in your family life, you know, their social life, their ability to understand others. I think just by being observant of people around them and noticing body posture and, you know, all those things that we kind of take for granted, but you could almost make a, you know, you might be going out specifically to see, oh, how many people are smiling today? Or do you see what I mean?
Yes.
Those kind of things. And finally, you know, there's the entrepreneurial thinking, problem solving. We might have seen a stream that needed a dam, or, you know, those kind of how would you could keep those stories going long after you've visited there.
Right. Yeah. It's amazing how, you know, we cultivate these things in our kids' minds through the storytelling process, and yet we're not demanding any output other than ideas. And eventually that output will be something, because we just can't keep it bottled up. We can't keep stories bottled up inside of us. I think we're just made as a storytelling people. Mm-hmm. And so eventually that will come out, but it's not forced. And that's what makes it beautiful too.
Mm-hmm. And I think children that feel confident creatively will feel more confident because they've got a sense of value about, oh, this was great. This thing that I did was great. And so you're slowly helping them blossom and the next slide, Peggy, was just ways in terms of a framework for storytelling on the go, about patterns and observing and seeing how children might lay things out, for example, the tendencies where you might ask them, where would you like to go today? You know, that's when you start to see some patterns, but it's a wonderful way to meet the child where the child is.
Exactly.
I saw, and again, I have to give you the link, but Pete Warmby, I've just discovered this just yesterday when I was putting this together, this talk for us. And he tweeted out and asked his question, has anyone managed to make a living from any special interest? And the response was unbelievable from people that had just focused on one thing because of autism. Right. And their careers were unbelievable. You know, working in NASA, you know, and because they've been allowed to focus. And it didn't mean, and I think there's that big worry with parents that, oh, they don't know this or they don't know that. And we're trying to fill them with so much stuff.
So much stuff. Exactly.
Let the child, you know, follow their passions. And everything else will, a bit like I was going back to ceramics.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, the chemistry fitted in, the math, the
right,
the storytelling through the clay, through the shapes and forms that I made, the crops, found my passion.
Right. And especially for us on the autism spectrum, that your brain is a freight train when it's on the right path, and you can do amazing things when it's on that track.
And I think the next slide was just reiterating what we've just said. I didn't know you were going to talk about your son with the superheroes, but you can, once you know what their patterns are. Mm-hmm. What they love, you can teach anything, like we were saying earlier.
That's so true.
Then just the last thing was this, the next slide. This is a very accessible book. It was written a few years ago, but it's a wonderful book for creative thinking. It's very graphically represented. There's some lovely examples inside of, I'll just try and find you a page. I should have, it's just unexpected outcomes from a graphic. I should have marked a page for you, but here's one. I don't know if you can see here, but it's a candle with some numbers down the side, but it was put together by some advertising creatives who did graphics. And it's very accessible for parents, I felt, to see how they can encourage children with connection making.
Right. So if you're listening to the podcast, the title of that book is The Secret of Highly Creative Thinker, or The Secret of the Highly Creative Thinker. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. How to make connections. Mm-hmm. That's my contribution for the topic today.
Awesome. Well, yeah, that filled the hour. and it was so much good information. I think the more that we share this idea of, learning and boosting creativity, the better off that our kids are going to be in the future. Just because we need creative thinkers, and we need to be able to cultivate that, like you said before, it gets cultivated out of them. And then it's much more difficult to get that put back in. Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. I used to teach further education as well as early years, and taught in a further ed college for around 11 years. And we'd have doctors and lawyers and my phone's gone.
Oh, no.
Oh, I think it's because people are trying to get into the house. the confidence, they were highly academic, but their creative confidence with just the love of play, it took a long time to kind of build that up and get that agile thinking back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think we all can be, keep our storytelling skills on the go as parents as much as children. It's a lovely time to rekindle our brains.
Exactly. Yes. Well, thank you for inspiring us in that. And if you want to find out more about Amanda's program, Scribe Easy, you can go to scribeeasy.com. And if you watch on the YouTube channel, we'll have that link in the description so that you can just click on that. But if you're listening on the podcast, it's Scribeasy. So it's kind of scribe and easy, but the E is shared, and then .com. So you'll want to check out her website and all of that. And on the screen is how to connect with you as well. So thank you again, Amanda. I appreciate your time. And I know you've kind of had some moving around today, and it's a different time zone. And we appreciate you making time for us in your schedule and sharing with us. So,
thank you, Peggy. It's a
pleasure. Thank you. Yes. And we're excited that you're a new partner. And so even if you go to the Sped Homeschool website, you'll find the Scribe Easy product. And we're excited to be working with you. So, yeah. And thank you. Yes. Thank you all for joining us. We appreciate you as our viewers as well. And just love that you join us every week. So we are wrapping up the month of April and the on-the-go learning. Next month is Mental Health Awareness Month. And so we are going to be focusing on mental health issues starting next week. And next week specifically, we're going to be talking to... I can't remember my guest name. It's Dave Carl, I do believe. But the title for our conversation is Boosting Self-Confidence in Students Who've Been Bullied. And Dave grew up with a disability and is going to kind of share with us what it was like to go through that and then to be able to build up his confidence after those bullying experiences so that you can share that with your children as an encouraging story. And he's also a book writer. Just know that this broadcast was sponsored by viewers like you. And if you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to Sped Homeschool, we're a 501c3 nonprofit. You can do that on our website. Just visit spedhomeschool.com. And in addition to making a donation, you can also find a lot of really helpful homeschool resources on our website. So search around, see what you can find. You can find curriculum like Amanda's Scribe Easy program, or you can find therapists and tutors, testing professionals, lots of incredible articles written by our partners as well. So thank you again, all of you, for joining us. And thank you, Amanda. And we'll see you all again here next week, same time, same place. And until then, have an awesome week and God bless everybody.